Good morning, everyone. And it's Todd and Julie with Chrisley Confessions.
Good morning. I'm actually so excited for today because you are in LA and I am in Nashville. And I actually get to have an hour conversation with you. I mean, this is great.
I know, but we can't talk about the things on this podcast that you and I talk about privately.
Oh, trust me. What we talk about on the podcast is probably more scandalous than what we talk about privately.
I do miss you, though.
Yes, I do, too.
Because you know that I don't sleep well, and I don't have my sleep number, and I don't have you to lay my leg on. So, I mean, I'm kind of screwed when it comes to kind of resting right now.
I know. It's a sad thing.
So let's just jump in this morning, and let's talk about, you know, kind of some of the things that a lot of people have called in asking questions about. You know, we get so many messages on Facebook, on Instagram, you know, questions on Twitter, you know, asking us, you know, personal questions, asking us things, you know, or telling us things that go on in their personal lives and asking what our opinions are. So I think that the common thread of questions that we have received over the last week has dealt with how do you deal with betrayal? So that is the topic that we're going to cover today. That is the name of this episode of our podcast, Chrisley Confessions, is betrayal. And so, Judah, do you want me to jump in or would you like to jump in first?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. We've had so many people, specifically a young woman named Allison from Detroit, sent me a long Facebook message talking about betrayal and how do you get past it, or if you can, or can you get past it? And her story is very similar to one that we unfortunately have experienced. You know, when this show started, we never had any idea that Chrisley Knows Best was going to take off like it has taken off. It was certainly our prayer, it was our hope, and it has now become our blessing as well as a curse. You know, we get to work together every day. We're fairly compensated for what we do, and we have so much love and respect and adoration from so many millions of people around the world. I mean, just in this country, millions of people. Forget the 30 countries or 35 countries that we are in, you know, outside of the U.S. And through that process, you know, you find out who your real friends are, and you also find out things about family. You find out about those people that truly love you, that truly respect you, that truly appreciate what you've done for them. And then you find out that you have family members that have harbored resentment, you know, their entire relationship with you. And I think that, you know, what happened with Allison is very similar to what happened with us. When you have a family member that goes and sells stories to the tabloids, when, you know, and our, this is where Allison's story and our story differs. She's not in the public eye, we are. I can only speak from my experience. When you have family members that go and sell stories to tabloids because they're angry with you, because they didn't get their way, because their lies are being revealed, that's hurtful. It's truly hurtful. And when you know who the person is that's doing it, and they still will call you or be in your face and tell you, oh, I didn't do that. You know, I would never do that to you. And you've got proof that they did it. I can't help you, Allison, on how to get past a situation like that, because that was my situation. Your situation has to do with your mother and her betrayal to you, you know, with a third party. So that situation is almost, I don't know how you get past your situation. For our situation, we haven't gotten past it. We're not going to get past it because I believe that when people show you who they are, it is time for you to believe them. When you have someone that goes and tries to cause harm to you or tries to cause harm to your children or to your wife, and they make up these elaborate stories that you've done bad things or that you've handled yourself in an improper manner, those allegations are very hurtful. And so I don't know quite how to get past that. So I think that today, Julie and I, you know, when this letter came from Allison, it was really, really what I thought I was over. It kind of brought back a lot of emotions for me because this came in last week. Julie, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think betrayal is one of those things that it is one of the hardest to get over, because especially when you as a person can honestly say that you have someone else's best interest, when you know that you never get up and start your day with trying to hurt someone, trying to make someone's life worse, trying not to be a positive role model for someone. And more importantly, you have given a part of your heart to someone and you've sacrificed for them, and they take that and they just have no regard for it whatsoever. I think it's hard. But you know, Todd, you said something to me just this past week, and it's truly resonated with me, that hurt people hurt people. And I do believe that. And you and I have had this conversation many, many times. And unfortunately, most of the time, those hurt people, they don't heal, or they don't realize that they are hurt and need to heal, and they continue putting this on someone else. They continue pushing it down the road.
But don't you think, though, Julie, I think, you know, you and I have discussed, don't you think that when people betray other people, don't you, or rather, I certainly feel this way, and I'm interested to kind of see what, you know, how you feel about it, but don't you feel that people that betray other people ultimately are betraying themselves? Because to thine own self be true. And are you really being true to yourself when you can't be true to others?
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. I don't believe that when you harbor resentment, when you harbor hate, when you harbor
jealousy,
disdain for someone, jealousy, all those emotions, when you harbor that, you're giving away a piece of yourself to every one of those horrible cancers, if you will, that they take a piece of you. And those pieces that they take away from you, I don't know that you ever get those back. And it's hard. You can't be a wife, a husband, a mother, a daughter, any of those. You can't be those that what you need to be for yourself and for others when you're harboring those kinds of emotions. And you're cheating yourself. You're cheating yourself, first of all, because if you don't let go of that and truly figure out where the source of your pain is coming from, and that is the problem. People refuse to acknowledge where the source of their pain is coming from because it is so painful. And we are in a society where we like to mask that pain, where we like to cover it up, where we like to deflect it onto other people, rather than say, okay, this is where I am. This is that 5-year-old child that was hurt. This is that 10-year-old child that was hurt. This is that 20-year-old young adult that was hurt. I need to deal with that hurt in order to be able to move forward, to help myself to become more whole.
Well, don't you think, though, Julie, that if you can't be true to yourself, how can you be true to someone else?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you can't tell yourself the truth, I mean, like, I get up every morning and I look in the mirror and I'm like, damn, you did it again. You look better today than you did yesterday. I mean, I tell myself the truth. But don't you think that if you can't look in the mirror and say, I'm having a shitty day, I've had some shitty days for the last 10 years. Don't you think when you look at yourself and you say that you should sit down and try to evaluate that, why am I in the same place today that I was 10 years ago? What Right. is my contribution to the dysfunction in my life? What is my contribution to the unhappiness in my life? What am I doing to remove the negativity from my life? Or in some cases, are you the only negativity that's there and you deflect it on others because you can't stand your own self?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's truly how I look at it. And you know, this situation with Allison and her mother, when your mother betrays you, there is no greater betrayal other than a child betraying you. So with Allison's situation, her mother betrayed her by sleeping with her ex-husband. So I don't give a damn if he's an ex-husband, an ex-cousin, an ex-work, employee, an ex-workmate, whatever. If he is your daughter's ex, he is off limits to you.
Absolutely.
If it is your son's ex, she's off limits to you. Why you want to follow your child?
Yep.
Because if you...
And you know, it's a hard, it's a very hard and complicated relationship, I think, sometimes, that parents and children have. Because, A, sometimes I think parents abuse the fact that a kid and a child is going to love them regardless. And I think God instills that want and that need in you, that you want to be loved by your parent. You want to know that your parent loves you unconditionally. So I think as parents, sometimes we take that too lightly. And then I think as children, sometimes we go through life with these blinders on because, A, if you don't have a parent that has your best interest at heart, it's hard from that child to acknowledge that. Listen, if your parent is not what they need to be for you, that's not on you.
That's on them.
You have to acknowledge where your parent is in their life, where they are, where they meet you. And you have to decide, is that enough for me? Is what my parent is capable of giving me, whether that's love, whether that's support, whatever it may be, wherever your parent is at that time, you as a child have to decide at that point, I'm willing to accept this. Or you know what? This is not enough for me. And I can't allow myself to be treated this way. And you have to either say, you know what, I'm gonna have a relationship with you based on those terms, or you know what, I have to step away and I have to love you from afar.
But you know,
you're
what?
My parent. I respect you because you are my parent, not necessarily because you deserve it at this moment. And you know what, the relationship has to be reevaluated.
I agree 100%. Now, you know, where and I know this is going to be shocking to some people. Julie and I don't really have a lot of huge disagreements are a differencing of opinions. We do have difference of opinions on certain things, but when it comes to parenting, our opinions are pretty much about 95% consistent. Where Julie and I will disagree is that Julie believes that you keep giving chances until they get it right. I don't believe in that. I believe that, you know, if you screw me once, shame on you. Get me twice, shame on me. You can't come and sit at my table and basically face fuck me. And we're having the best time of our life. Kumbaya, you know, oh, I love you. I love you. I love you. And then turn around here and sell a tabloid story. You can't come put your feet under my table again unless you're willing to check your phone at the front door. We have security frisk you. And we sit you in a chair in the middle of the room to where all eyes are on you, which is obviously what you want. Are you with me doing the shady shit you do? Then you can come in. You can come in my house, but without all of those precautions, you can't. And so, for me, I have to step back and say, is the relationship worth all of the effort that has to go into protecting yourself and the person who's doing it to you from betraying you again? Betrayal is one of the hardest things to overcome. I don't care if it's infidelity in your marriage, if it's betrayal by, like, what happened with Allison with her ex and her mother. If it's betrayal from a father walking out of your life, you know, when you were a child and not supporting you, or a mother. In my case, it was, you know, Lindsay and Kyle's mother. But if that's your betrayal, then guess what? You don't get to go out here and pass your pain around like it's candy. Your pain does not get to become someone else's pain. We all, everyone in this world, has a burden that we're carrying. Everyone in this world has heartache that they're trying to heal. Every person in this world has someone that they love with their heart and soul that has hurt them. You have to decide at some point, is the love worth the pain? Because love is not supposed to cause pain. You can love someone, they'll make a mistake and hurt your feelings, but when it hurts your heart, when it hurts your core, when it causes you to question who you are and who you have been, and technically who you can become, then is that person right to be in your life? I feel like that if a person can't have a positive relationship with their parents, they can't have one with their siblings, they can't have one with their coworkers, they can't have one with their in-laws, they can't have one with cousins, friends. If your directory of people in your life, your Rolodex of your life, if that Rolodex is constantly having names pulled from it and new ones added, the problem is with you, because you can't have 100 failed relationships and feel sorry for yourself because you had a contribution to some of those relationships failing. Do you agree with that, Julie?
I do. And I believe it goes back to accountability. It's accountability when, for the things that you know you haven't done right, it's accountability to say, you know what, I'm hurt and it's my job to deal with that hurt and not pass that pain around. I believe this is something that we'll definitely revisit. But let's see what the callers have to say this week.
Well, with that being said, I don't want to jump away from Allison yet. Allison, I want to direct you to find a strong therapist, because some of the things that you post, you know, that you put in your message to me, you know, they cause me concern for you. And I want to make sure that you find a therapist that you can get with and talk this through. You need to understand that your mother's lack of judgment does not reflect poorly on you. It reflects poorly on her. I want you to know that you're worthy, that you deserve better. And I need you to, as sick as this is going to sound, and I know you may not be in a position to receive it today, but I want you to think about this. This is God's blessing to you, because He removed all shadows of doubt. He let the light come through to where there was darkness, and He allowed you to see who your mother truly is, and to maybe hopefully understand that this woman has issues of her own when she thinks it's okay to do what she did. A man has been sorry since the beginning of time. A man will put his Peter wherever he can put it. So at the end of the day, I ain't saying that you need to forgive him. He was an ex for a reason. And if he was that good, you'd still be chasing him. So you ought to be thankful that your mama got your sloppy leftovers, because if it was that great, you'd have been still wanting him. So with that being said, we love, we respect your position, and we are going to be praying for you. And I'm going to ask God to move you forward and to move your mother and this man forward. But you need to understand you have two children, not by this man. So you can cut ties with him completely. And if you have to do it with your mother, you have to do it with your mother, because you have to protect your own mental health. Now let's move on to the questions.
Hi, Todd. Hi, Julie. My name is Amanda, and I am from New Mexico. And my question is, how do you get your boyfriend of 2 years to propose? He keeps saying it's going to happen, but then I get my hopes up and it doesn't happen. So I was wondering if you have any advice of me being patient, or wondering if it is going to happen. I love your show, and thanks. I love y'all.
Thank you, Amanda, for calling in.
Thank you, Amanda. Todd, you want me to start?
You can.
Okay. Amanda, first I would say that you can't pressure your significant other to propose. If he feels pressured, it's not right. You know, you have to, and I firmly believe, start your relationship off on the right foot. And him feeling that pressure from you is not it. I think you may have to ask yourself why he is maybe pulling back, or why he hasn't made that step yet, and see if there's issues that you guys need to resolve between each other. I would tell you that was actually a personal big issue for Todd and I. I never wanted Todd to feel like I was pressuring him into getting married. And we had that conversation, and, you know, I said, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll happen. But I never, ever, ever want you to think that I am pressuring you to get married, because I'm not. You had been down that road before where you did feel pressure to get married. And that was the last thing that I wanted. So I would tell you, Amanda, as much as I know that you feel like, you know, this is what you want to happen, it may be your time, but it may not be God's time. And I feel like, I know in my life, that's been where I've had the most angst, is when I felt like I wanted to move in a direction, or I was ready to move in a direction, and it wasn't God's time. And he has a way of, you know, holding you back, of making you stop and making you be still for a minute.
You know, Julie, I agree 100%, but Amanda didn't ask about God's time. She asked about her boyfriend's time. So, you know, let's kind of look at it from a man's perspective. Amanda, you know, I agree with Julie 100% that everything that you try to force falls through. So if it's not in God's time, it's not going to happen. But let's talk about your boyfriend's time. 2 years. I don't know if you're living with him. I don't know if you're sleeping with him. I don't know if you're doing everything that a wife is supposed to be doing, because if you are, this man has no incentive to marry you, because he's already getting all the benefits without signing on the bottom line and contracting to something that he's already getting for free. I think that 2 years, you know, Savannah has a role that we kind of laugh at, but it's true. Savannah feels like that if you don't know within 2 years of dating someone that this is the person you want to spend the rest of your life with, then you're wasting time and you need to move on. I feel like that, you know, that I can't give you the kind of advice that I'd love to give you without having more details. I don't know if you're living together. I don't know if you're sleeping together. I don't know if you've commingled funds. I don't know what his history is as to maybe he's waiting until he can buy you the right ring and what his financial situation is, and he wants to come to
you the
right way.
We don't know how old they are.
100%. We don't know how old you are. We don't know, you know, kind of where you are in your life and what maybe is causing him to have reservations. But always remember, a man will do as little as he has to do as long as you accept it. Or he'll do as much as he needs to in order to feel that he's worthy of you. So I think that going back to your question of how do you get him to marry you, I think you need to spend less time worrying about how to get him to marry you and figure out how to get to a place in your relationship to where all he wants to do is marry you. Good luck with that. Next.
Hey, Todd and Julie. This is Kyle Clapp. I'm from Mayfield, Kentucky. I'm just a big fan of the show, and I've been watching it ever since season one, and I think y'all are doing a great job with the TV show and everything. I just love it. My question is that I'm going on 23 years old. I never have smoked, never have drank, and I keep having problems with, you know, my with relationships with girls. And I wanted some advice from a lovely couple such as y'all, and I would like to know some relationship advice that could kind of help me get a girl into a relationship, because I've had relationships in the past that wasn't very good for a while. But then again, I would like to find me a good girl that wants to look for a long-term relationship. Thanks.
Thank you, Kyle, for calling in, and we're grateful that you've been watching the show since season one. You know, we have so many fans that are constantly telling us, I mean, they can tell us as much about our life as we have, and we've lived it. I think that I'm going to give you the same advice that I give Chase. You are never going to find the kind of girl that you want, or that you should be wanting to marry, that to be the mother of your children. You're not going to find her in a bar hanging out. You're not going to find her partying. You're going to find a girl that you are worthy of based on what you're putting out. And I say to Chase every day, the kind of girl you're looking for, with all the qualities that you want, are you the kind of man that possesses those same qualities that she's worthy of? And if you're not, then you're not evenly yoked. So, you know, the advice that I would give you, son, is that be the kind of man that you want, that your children will be proud of. Even though you don't have children today, your reputation will spill over to your children later on. So be the kind of man that you would want your children to look up to, because that's going to be the kind of man that a woman, a good, decent, godly woman, is going to look at and say, wow, that dude's got it going on. That dude's got a job. That dude is moving forward in his life. He's working on his furthering his education. He's a good, decent, honest man. He's got integrity. He's got character. He makes me feel worthy. He makes me feel special. He makes me feel respected. Be that kind of man, because remember, you get out of anything what you put into it. And a relationship is the hardest job that you will ever have outside of raising children. So you have to put as much work into it as you're expecting her to put into it. Julie?
Absolutely, Kyle. And you know what? You are a young man. Focus on you. And I have people all the time that say, you know what? When I put it down, when I put down trying to find that one, trying to find the perfect person, and I focused on myself in doing all the things, Todd, that you just said, it happened. It happened because I had myself right. And that's what people will say. You know what? When I got myself right and I was doing what I knew was the right thing and I was working on making me be the best I could be, it just happened. And I think that's what will happen for you, Kyle. Good luck.
Thanks, Kyle.
Hey, Todd and Julie, this is Seth. I had a quick question for both of you. When you have two parents and one parent who doesn't seem to be in really committed to the relationship, and which would be my father, and who doesn't really seem to want to have a relationship with me, as a 24-year-old, what advice would you give me? Would you try to still salvage that, or is that something that I just need to move on? And also, as a side note, do you guys ever do like a meet and greet or something like that? Because I think it would be really cool to meet you guys. You just seem like awesome people, and it would be a lot of fun to meet you guys. Thank you so much. Hope you guys have a great rest of the year. Bye.
Thank you, Seth, for calling in this morning. I think, Seth, you know, unfortunately, I can give you advice on this. You know, my first marriage with failed after 6 years, and, you know, technically should have never resulted in a marriage. You know, what I've learned from that situation is that if your child goes out here and has a relationship and there's a pregnancy that comes from that, that is not a reason to get married. So, you know, that's what happened with me. So that relationship started out unevenly yoked. It started out in the wrong way. And I had two beautiful children that came from it that I love with all of my heart, but it should have never resulted in a marriage. So I think that, you know, what happened with me was, now here you've got a divorce, you've got two children from this marriage, and, you know, Julie and I raised Lindsay and Kyle from the time that they were 4 and 5 when Julie and I were together, but I had raised them from the day that they were born. But their mother was fairly non-existent in their life. And then she would come in and then she'd leave and she'd come in and she'd leave. And, you know, and both Lindsay and Kyle have said to me that they wish that I had made that so permanent, just cut ties, walked away, and never had any involvement, so that they wouldn't have been confused about how much loyalty to give to Julie, or them feeling like they're being disloyal to their biological mother. So I think that from your standpoint, a child shouldn't have to force a parent to want to have a relationship. That should be born and bred in a parent. That should be a parent's worst heartache, not having a relationship with their child. And I know, because I've had strained relationships, you know, with Lindsay and Kyle, you know, because of the confusion that was caused from that divorce. And so I get it, but a child should never question that they're loved. And regardless of all of the lows that Kyle had, I've loved him from day one, and I love him today. And I want him to succeed and be the greatest man in the world, because I know that he has the potential to be that, and he's doing that. You know, Lindsay internalized things differently. You know, Lindsay was this child that thought that if she did everything perfect and she was a great student and that everything lined up exactly the way that it was supposed to and it looked great, then everything would be great. And that's not the way life is. You shouldn't have to work for your parents' affection. Your parents should give that freely. And of all the bad decisions that my children have made, and there have been many, I still love them. I don't forget the mistakes that they've made, but I forgive them when they make them because they're my child and I have no obligation to forgive. So the issue here is with your father, not with you. So, Seth, I want you to know that hopefully you have a good relationship with your mother. Hopefully you know that you're God's child, and that what you need to focus on is moving on with your life, building a life for yourself, feeling good about who you are. And if your father doesn't see that and can't respect that, then I'm going to tell you, like I told another caller this morning, Allison, you have to place proper boundaries in that relationship. So, Julie, do you have something from a mother's perspective to say?
I do, Seth. I would say to you again, find someone that you can talk to, whether that is a therapist, a pastor, a mentor, someone that is going to give you good, solid wisdom and advice. But I would tell you, this is your father. And I think Todd and I have both learned that a lot of people are the way that they are because of where they came from. Now, that doesn't mean where you come from is where you got to stay.
Amen, sister.
But I believe that, especially, and I'm not sure how old your dad is, but I know I am a lot of the reason that I am who I am is because of where I came from, whether that's good or whether that's bad. I think there are times that people are as good of a parent as they know how to be. I'm not saying that as a cop-out, but I'm saying that as... where is your dad in his life right now? What has he experienced in his life that has brought him to the place where he is? I can tell you that I love my children unconditionally. I love my children, and I have said this to them since the day they were born. If not another person in this world loved you, I love you enough for everybody. And I will feel that way until the day that I die. So I would tell you, it is not about you at this point. You have to make sure, again, as Todd discussed earlier, that you aren't passing this pain along. Because of this pain that you, I can hear it in your voice, that you feel because you don't feel loved by your father, that you aren't passing that along to other people in your life who do love you. That you are putting that relationship in its proper place, that you're finding someone that can help you work through that and put it in its proper perspective. And I would ask you just to keep moving forward, be who you know that you are, and this one relationship is not going to define you.
No, it's not going to define Seth, but what it can do is it can change Seth's entire outlook towards everything in life. When you don't have the love of a parent, it causes you to feel unworthy. It causes you to feel like I'm not good enough. And I think that, you know, as a child has no way of sorting through those emotions. But as an adult, we do know that when we see other things that make us feel good and that we see relationships that we are like, oh my God, I wish I could have had that, then it's our obligation to learn from that, to make sure we don't repeat the cycle. Seth, your father is missing out on the greatest gift that God has ever given him, and that is to be the father of a child. The heartache that comes from being the father of a child is so heavy at times that you feel like you're not going to be able to sustain the heartbreak. But then God lets you wake up the next day and the love that you have for that child has not dissipated. It has not gone anywhere. And you start kicking into parental mode of how do I get my child to be better? How do I get them to do this? At the end of the day, it's not your job, Seth, to be the parent. You're the child, he's the parent, and he needs to shit or get off the pot. He needs to learn that there's more to being a father than making a child. A boy can do that. So Seth, thank you so much for tuning in. As far as doing meet and greets, Julie and I, they're working on a tour for us right now for Chrisley Confessions, and we would love to meet you at some point. Until then, God bless. Next question.
Hi, Todd. Hi, Julie. My name is Erica, and I am just wondering, have you ever been used by friends or even family due to the fame that you've acquired from the show? And how do you deal with that? And how do you prepare your kids to trust people that may potentially take advantage of them?
Thank you, Erica, for calling in. I think we touched on a little bit of that, Julie, in the
situation. We did, Erica, but thank you for calling in. And man, I mean, this podcast today was completely ordained, and I believe that because every single caller has had this common thread today. I mean, have you heard that?
It's a common thread of betrayal. It's betrayal. And, you know, I think to answer your question, have we been betrayed? 100% we have. We've been betrayed by some of the, by people that's closest to us. We've been betrayed by people, yes, family members that have wanted money. But listen, I've been dealing with that since I had money. And I thank God I've had, you know, have done well in my life. Long before the show. But, you know, I look at it this way. If I give you something and it leaves my hand, then it's gone. In my mind, it's gone. If you return it, then wow, what a blessing. What a blessing. I mean, this person has integrity. Unfortunately for Julie and I, we've had very few who have had integrity. We have given tons of money away with hopes that it was going to help people to move forward in their life. They were going to be better for it, and only to never get a return phone call, for them to never honor their commitments. But, Julie, have I ever called anyone that has borrowed money from us and asked to be repaid?
No, not at all. And I think it's even more so not just the monetary of people taking advantage of us from a money aspect, but, you know, people taking advantage of the fact that, okay, we have a platform now. We have connections to certain people. And just the fact that not everyone has your best interest. And I believe that is something that we have tried so hard to talk to Chase and Savannah and Grayson about, especially that just because you go out here and you have no hurt in your heart, or you have no evil in your heart, doesn't mean someone else doesn't. And we've also taught them that, you know what, this show has been a blessing. It has been a wonderful opportunity for us, but it does not define who we are. We are a family first. And when this show is long gone, we're still going to be a family. And we have also told them, you know what, the people that have been with you from day one, that have been your friends since childhood, and Todd and I both have those people in our life, and we still have them in our life, but we had them before the show.
100%. And
you know, just because someone is a friend of yours on Facebook or a follower of yours on Instagram or Twitter, that does not mean they're your friend.
100%. And I mean, you know, listen, I still have the same best friend from my entire childhood. I mean, from the time that we were in elementary school, I'm still best friends with her. I have a handful of close relationships that I love and value and respect and that I invest in every day. But outside of that, I don't, only because of the betrayal that we have received. Money can be replaced. Thank God, as long as he gives you another day, to get up and to have the ability to do better, then that's a blessing. And if you have the ability to go to work, you're going to replace what someone's taken from you. But what can't be fixed is the level of betrayal that someone has exhibited towards you in a repeated fashion. I always say, you know, and I've said this to my children, do not crawl in bed with a snake, then bitch when it bites you. And they have been taught, you know, Chase has had some very tough lessons of betrayal. And, you know, from friends, relationships, and, you know, that was there for his money and his position in society and, you know, to get their 5 minutes of fame. Savannah has had that. But they seem to have navigated their way through it. Would I have liked for them to have seen it sooner rather than later? Absolutely, because I'm a parent that I don't want my children's time being wasted or abused. But it happened in God's time. God let them sit at that table of dysfunction long enough till their belly was full of it. And once they got a belly full of it, they moved on. So, Julie?
Yes?
That I think is a credit to you and I staying consistent and making sure that we stayed on top of them and making sure that they always knew where we stood and what our position was on the current situation that they were dealing with. So going back to our caller's question, yes, we've experienced all of the above. How do you deal with it? Eyes wide open. Believe half of what you see, nothing of what you hear. And only be willing to give away what you can afford to never come back. Next caller, please.
Hi, Todd and Julie. My name is Dallas from Texas. And Todd, my question's for you. I just got my real estate license in March this year. So I'm just curious, how are you so successful and what are your tips for somebody starting out in the industry? Thanks.
Thank you, Dallas. Starting out in the industry of real estate. Well, you know, real estate is something that I love and have a passion for and have my entire life. I think that came from, you know, me always wanting to have a beautiful home and beautiful things and to make sure that I had a beautiful life. And real estate was able to provide that for Julie and myself. I would say to you that if you're thinking about getting into real estate, you know, obviously getting your license is the first hurdle, but it, believe it or not, as you're going through getting your license, you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to get through this. It's the easiest hurdle that you're going to have because real estate and the real estate market is constantly changing. It's constantly evolving and you have to know your market. You have to know what the consumer is truly, you know, what's the hot thing today? What's the consumer buying now? What is the one thing that will make my product be in more demand than the next builder that's, you know, two lots down. So I think that you have to focus on your consumer and you have to have a passion for the real estate. You have to want to do it more than anything else. Have a love for it. I believe that should stem and should transcend into every aspect of your life. If you don't love doing it, it's probably not going to turn out great. And if it's something that you have to do, regardless of whether you love it or not, you got to get in there and give it the, you know, the best that you have to give. But real estate has been wonderful, you know, to Julie and myself and to our family. I encourage my children every day to pursue their real estate and to make sure that they're, you know, kind of following in some of the footsteps that Julie and I have taken and others, you know, to kind of steer away from. I want them to learn from the negative experiences that we've had and to focus on the positive. And Dallas, I wish you huge, huge success.
Let me know. from a licensee standpoint, I would tell you to do your homework, you know, put your license and apply with a wonderful broker, someone who, you know, has a great
mentor.
Reputation, who is knowledgeable, who, you know, has great educational offerings to you, because a lot of companies offer great training. And that is so important because if you learn those things from the very beginning, it will just help you to become a better agent. So I would tell you to, yes, be choosy with who you put your license with, who holds your license, and, you know that they're looking out for you. This can be a mentor for you. This can be someone that you go to for questions because getting your license is only the very first step. You know, it's important to know there's so many other aspects of real estate and so much more to learn once you have your license. So good luck to you.
Hi, guys. Love you. Love your show. This is Holly from Kaufman, Texas, and I was just calling with just a silly question, I guess. I was wondering where Todd comes up with all of these Toddisms. I mean, these one-liners that I've never heard before, and we just think it's hilarious. So I was just wondering if that's something. I mean, I'm from the South, so I was wondering if maybe you're part of the South. Everyone says things like this. So anyway, I was just curious. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, Holly. I mean, you know, maybe it's a lack of education. Maybe it's a lack of just not knowing what to say at the time. Or maybe it's because I've heard so much of this, you know, growing up from my mother, from, you know, different, you know, from her side of the family, from my dad's side of the family, or just people in general that was around me in the little town that I grew up in. But I have found that, you know, it just seems to always come out when it's supposed to. And, you know, the world has taken a hold to all of these sayings that I have, and I'm grateful for that. But these are just true country Southern sayings that I grew up with, and they just seem to always find a place back in my life, and they always seem to fit. So, I mean, Julie, do you have any comment on that?
You know, I've heard some of these many, many times before. And then he'll come up with something totally random and off the wall that I have no idea where it came from or even what it means sometimes. And, you know, I attribute some of that to Nanny Faye because she has some of those sayings as well. Now, hers don't always come out the right way, but she does have them in there. So I believe there's a lot of DNA in there.
Well, so with that being said, Holly, there you have it. And I appreciate you tuning into Chrisley Confessions and calling in. Next.
Hi, Todd and Julie. This is Judy. I'm calling from Kentucky. I've actually called before about asking about pageants. My daughter started doing pageants in Tennessee here about a month ago, and she won Heart of the Service, so now she gets to go to California with NAM, and we were just wanting to know how else to keep calling to with it, because it sure is crazy doing pageants. Just can you give me some insight on how to stay calm and make everything go smoother? Thank you. Bye.
I'm going to let Julie jump into that because Julie is a pageant mom.
You know, what I would tell you is, first of all, congratulations for your daughter moving forward. And I would just say that make sure that she's prepared. Make sure that she is working hard toward whatever those goals are, whether it is her her charity work, preparing for interview, whatever it might be, fitness, make sure you're prepared. And if you go into something, whether it's a pageant or whatever it is in your life, and you are truly prepared for that moment and you've done all that you can possibly do, it's out of your hands at that point. And again, do we support pageants? Absolutely we do. But we're even more of a supporter of women, of girls, of girl bosses, of empowering women, and to know that a single pageant does not define who you are. This pageant does not define who your daughter is. We hope that this pageant will help her, to help her advance, to help her have more self-confidence. Whatever it is that she needs, we hope that that pageant helps to give her a little bit of that. But no, when your daughter walks off that stage, whether she's a winner or whether she isn't, it does not define who she is. And as her mother, that is your job. You are to be proud of her. You are to encourage her and know that, you know what, as long as she loves doing the pageants, do the pageants. They're great.
Do the Miss Universe pageant. If you want to have all of those things that Judah just mentioned to you, then jump on board with the Miss Universe pageant.
But, you know, at the end of the day, if there comes a time when she doesn't love it anymore, when she's not happy, see that. Help your child see that and know that, you know what, she's done it and it's time to move on to something else.
Hey, Julie. Hey, Todd. This is Jennifer from Tennessee. I love you guys. My son and me, we switched telephones, and he went away for college this past August, and he doesn't realize that his Instagram is still active on his phone that I'm using. So I can see everything he is doing in college, and it is freaking me out. And I don't know if I should confront him. You know, a big part of me wants to just go down there and taint his hide. But then another part wants to keep investigating and watching and just keeping tabs on him. What in the world would you guys do? Please, please give me some good advice. Thanks.
Jennifer.
Oh, my goodness.
You've turned into Tide.
Ooh.
I think it's great. I mean, me personally, I would never share with him that I have access to his Instagram. I would be reading that shit nonstop. I would know exactly what he was doing. So, you know, when he sends a little DM to some chick and says, "Hey, babe, we're going to hook up tonight. My place, 7 p.m. Guess what? I'd show up with a basket of food. I'd be there at 7:05 with enough for three. That's how Todd would handle it. He'd be thinking, holy shit, my mom is so psychic. It's like she knows every move I'm making. Now, Julie, what would you do?
Well, yes, and I do, there's a fine line there because, you know, I don't know what's on your child's Instagram. And, you know, I think it depends on what exactly he is doing because, first and foremost, of course, you know, as a mother, it is about his safety. You know what? He's in college, and yes, we all know that more times than none, children do things in college that they shouldn't do. So Oh, that's a tough one for me. Todd would convince our children that he literally had a chip implanted in them to know what they were doing, and they would believe it because that's just how my kids are. And the whole time it was Instagram on his phone. So, you know, my prayers I give you my prayers because I don't know what I would do at that moment.
And which is why you never had to worry about it because you had me always staying on top of our kids.
Right, because Todd in this situation, he would keep like watching the Instagram morning, noon, and night, knowing everything. And he'd probably send me to wherever my child was in college to investigate.
Well, listen, now you and I both know that when Lindsay went to college, I hired a private investigator to follow her around campus just to make sure she was okay. So, you know, is there a level that I won't go to? Well, if there is, we haven't found it yet. So I would say keep the Instagram. Don't let him know you have access to it because, listen, knowledge is power. And wouldn't you rather know when your child messes up so you can jump in quickly, try to intervene and correct versus him thinking that he's getting away with something so therefore he continues to repeat the bad habit? So keep the gram. Next.
Hey, Julie and Chris Lee, I just want to say I love you guys so much. And I'm from Texas, and I just have one question for Todd. Was Nanny Faye a strict parent? Because as we see her now on the show, I just cannot imagine she was. But to raise such a successful man, I don't know. Maybe she was. Could you tell us a little bit about how her parenting style was when you were growing up? Thanks. Love you guys.
Was Nanny Faye strict? Let's just say that the Nanny Faye you see today is not the Nanny Faye of the days in the past. My mother worked 12, 14 hours a day in a textile factory. My brother and I had responsibilities around the house. We knew what we had to do. We knew that every Saturday we were mowing the lawn and washing the cars. We knew that Monday through Friday, it was our responsibility to go to school, have good grades. And as my mother said, do not let a phone call beat you home. That let us know that if the school called her or a parent had to call her about a problem they'd had with one of her children, she was going to tear our ass up when we got home. So my mother has always been strict, but never to the level that I have been. My mother was very much a good, decent, godly woman who has always been the hardest worker that I've ever known in my life. And I think that for me, I never caused my mother any problems, and she will tell you that and has said that in interviews. I never caused her any problems. I did not get into trouble. She didn't have those issues with me, but I didn't behave poorly because it would have broken my heart to see my mother cry, knowing how hard she was working to feed us, to put a roof over our head. And you know, I just didn't want to give her that heartache. So, you know, I think that at the end of the day, my mother has always been strict with the expectations that she had with her children. And if she had to step up and step out and get a little crazy because her children stepped out of line, she had no problem in meeting you wherever you stood. I say that my mother's arm was like Gumby when I was growing up. You could be driving down a road, she could be driving, and if you smarted off to her, that right arm grew and could reach all the way in the back seat, catch you by the hair of your head, shake you three times, put your seatbelt on you, and then tell you I love you after she slapped the shit out of you. So that's the Nanny Faye of the days gone by. Next.
Hi, guys. This is Brittany. I've been watching you guys on TV since the first season. I listen to Lindsay's podcast. I love you guys' podcast. I love your talk show. But I just wanted to know what happened to the assistant that Todd had on season one, and did Chris Lee and company ever go through? Love you guys. Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and we appreciate every person that watches Chris Lee Knows Best. Tanya has been with me since, God, forever. How long, Julie? 15 years?
Probably, yeah.
15 years. And not only has she been an amazing assistant, she's also an amazing human being. And she's my friend for life. And I love her. And my children love her. Tanya has taken another job and does very well because we travel so much now. And she's doing very well. But I mean, I communicate with her not as much as I'd like to. But we cannot talk for 3 months and pick up the phone and it picks right back up where we were the last time that we spoke. As far as Chrisley & Company, you're going to see a lot of stuff happening in 2019 and 20 regarding Chrisley & Company and the brand, whether, you know, we're going to become a home fashions, you know, brand that is going to give you paint colors and wall coverings, flooring, fabrics, China, stemware. If you can use it in your home, we are going to have it with Chrisley & Company. And what we're working on is amazing, and we feel so blessed to be in the position to offer the things that we find such joy in and such great service from. So I would tell you to stay tuned. You're going to find out a lot more about your question in Season 7 of CKB. Thanks a lot for calling in. Next.
Hey, Todd and Julie. This is Michael. I just wanted to first say that I love you guys. Your show is so much fun and so entertaining and really brings me and my friends from home together. We're pretty much the Manny Faye fan club, to be honest. My question is mainly directed towards Todd, but if Julie wants to chime in as well with some advice, that'd be greatly appreciated. So I recently graduated college in 2016 and just finished my one-year master's program and have been on the hunt for a job for the past month or two, and I just have been having like a horrible experience. Either the companies that do get back to me, I don't feel that I feel overqualified for, and the ones that I actually do want to work for haven't even like taken the time of day to like open the application. So if you have any advice for me on the job hunt process post-college transition period, that'd be awesome. Well, I love you guys and keep doing what you guys do. Thanks.
Michael, thanks so much for calling in. And I love you already because my name is Michael as well, Michael Todd. And yes, I was named after Liz Taylor's first husband. So with that being said, Michael, congratulations on graduating college. Jobs, good jobs, great jobs are hard to find. In any climate of our country, great jobs are hard to find. You know why? Because people that find, if there's a great job, there's 1,000 people applying for that one great job. So I think you have to figure out what differentiates you from all the other applicants. And, you know that regardless of whether it's a job that you want to do or not, you may have to take that lower salaried position that is not going to be exactly what you want and work your way from the bottom to the top. You know, I know within my company, you know, my kids always had to work and, you know, they would come into the office. They would clean the desk of all the employees. They would clean the bathrooms. They would clean the break rooms. And I paid them to do that. But they didn't start coming in as an asset manager. They didn't come in as a closer. They didn't come in as a title researcher. They came in cleaning. And so they had to work their way work their way up. And so I would say to you is that, you know, we're not promised that we're going to start out with the job that we're going to have for the rest of our life. Be grateful that you have the education that allows you to place that on your application. Take the lower paying job if it's a company that you can see growth in and work your way from the bottom to the top, because then when you know every aspect of that company, knowledge is power and you become invaluable. I say this every day, and Julie, you can jump in on this one here. I say every day, we have several people that work for us, you know, in our homes. Housekeepers, house managers, and they fight amongst each other all the time. I say every day, Jesus, take the wheel when it comes to these housekeepers. Why do I have to mediate a situation every day? And one of the main players in this group, I call them the maid mafia. One of the main players in this group would always say, well, she's just trying to make herself invaluable to you. She wants to be able to do everything for you. And I thought, well, now, this is the dumbest ass statement that I've ever heard. Doesn't it make sense that if you make yourself invaluable to someone, that means they see your value? And that means that you're going to grow with that person. They're going to reward you for that. So, you know, Julie, do you have any advice to give Michael?
Absolutely, Michael. I would say continue on with your education. You said you had completed 1 year of your master's program. Go ahead, finish that master's, because as you know, there are lots and lots of competition in the workforce today. And, you know, If you don't have the job experience, that education can get you through the door. And I agree with Todd wholeheartedly. If you have a company that you really have your mind set on that you feel like would be a good fit for you, take a position, even if it's not one that you want. If there's room for growth and you're willing to put in the hard work, it'll happen.
There you go, Michael. Next.
Hey, Julie. Hey, Todd. This is Allie from Southern Illinois. I had a question for each of you. I was wondering if Julie ever considered making her own cookbook. And Todd, I was wondering how you dealt with the birth of your children, considering you can hardly stand getting a needle for an IV. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Hi, Allie from Illinois. You know, I am actually working on something as we speak. So, you will see something. I am really looking forward to this next year, the next season of Chrisley Knows Best, and expanding what I truly love. And everyone knows I love to cook. I love to entertain. I love all of that. And you will definitely see that. As for Todd surviving the birth of our children, he almost didn't. When I had Chase, Todd actually fainted when I was in labor. I was actually delivering my child, and he's leaned against the wall, and he's passed out. So he did not handle that well. He did better with baby two and baby three. So Savannah, he was better. Grayson came really, really quickly, 9 weeks early. So he didn't really have time to get freaked out about it. So listen, when Todd has to do it, he can do it. I will tell you, I went through breast cancer in 2012 and I could not have asked for a better nurse. And even though, yes, he hates to get a needle and he's all squeamish when he sees blood, I can tell you he never flinched when it came to taking care of me. And that has been one of the biggest blessings I could have ever had.
Well, there you go. I mean, I did faint with Chase because, I mean, you know, I'm not good with seeing blood and all that kind of stuff, but I got through it. I got through it. And as Julie said, I managed with Savannah, I managed with Grayson. Grayson came, like Julie said, 9 weeks early. And, you know, I came home, Julie was in the bed, which is something that this woman never does. I knew by looking at her something was wrong, even when she was sleeping. I touched her face. She was burning up. I got her up, took her straight to the hospital. They went to check her, and at that point, her water broke. So now we're having a baby. We went through so much with Grayson of her going into labor. She gets halfway through labor, and then when they check her, they realize that he's breached. Now she's got to do an emergency C-section. So I had no time for it to be about Todd and for me to figure out, am I going to faint for this? If I am, I going to look good laying there? I had no time to figure that out. So I think that what happens for me, and I think it happens for so many people in the world, God gives us what we need at the time that we need it. And if Julie's falling apart, there's no way that I'm afforded the luxury to fall apart. So to answer your question, I fainted with Chase. I survived with Lindsay, Kyle, Savannah, and Grayson. Next.
Hi, Todd and Julie. This is Ashlyn from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I have a friend who was recently diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. Julie, since you battled with this yourself, can you give me some advice on the best way to be there for my friend? Love you guys. Thanks so much.
Hi, neighbor from Murfreesboro. Oh, my goodness. So stage 3 breast cancer. You know what? I would tell you to pray, pray, pray for your friend. I would tell you to just be there for her. Let her cry when she wants to cry. Let her, you know, I don't even know. Todd, what
do you say? I think that, you know, we went through the breast cancer and, you know, what I would say to you is, you know, stage 3, you know, there's, you know, listen, we've come so far in medicine. We've come so far in how we treat things. And, you know, Julie was stage 1. So, you know, stage 3 is more serious. So what I would say to you is I would ask you to continue to be a very uplifting friend for her. Make sure that she knows that she has not lost the battle because the battle's just begun. I would say to you that if she's married, don't forget her husband because no one knows what kind of fear that a man who's in love with his wife is going through when he thinks about losing her. So I would ask that you continue to remain compassionate, that you be, you know, that you show her that you're there to lift her up, and that on the days that she feels like she's not going to be able to make it through, you show her that she is. Reinforce to her why you are her friend. Reinforce to her the qualities that this woman has in her life, and what she, and how she blesses those that are, you know, that that are around her. I would ask that you make sure that, you know, be a patient advocate. There is nothing better, there's no better gift that you can give your friend than to go to a doctor's appointment with her, to do research for her, to find out if she's at the right location for the right treatment. You know, just because someone says they specialize in breast cancer doesn't mean that they're, that, that they're the end-all, be-all specialist of breast cancer. You know, Julie was diagnosed when we lived in Atlanta, and we have Emory Hospital. Ruth O'Regan was one of the premier breast cancer doctors in the country at the time. But I got on my knees and I prayed, and God came to me and said, Julie has to go to Johns Hopkins. We had never been to Johns Hopkins. We knew no one. But with, when that happened, I reached out to my friend, you know, Dr. Michael Johns, who's the dean of medicine there at Emory. And lo and behold, this man who I didn't had no knowledge that he had ever been the dean of medicine at Johns Hopkins. But God gave me that information in my prayer. And when, and literally, Michael, within, what was it, Julie, 3 hours? Michael had Julie booked with the head of oncology, the head of surgical oncology, the head of radiology, and the head of plastics. And within, what was it? You were diagnosed September the 12th?
No, I was diagnosed March 5th.
March 5th.
And I had my surgery March 22nd.
Right. So you can see how fast we moved the train, but it was all led by God and the people that God placed in our life. And I remember Dr. Ted Sengaris, who was Julie's surgical oncologist, saying, giving us the greatest compliment that we'd ever been given after her surgery and as she was recovering. He sat in that room with us and he said, you guys have changed so many lives here at Johns Hopkins because we've watched how you two step together in time. And I hope to one day have what you two have. So you have to be as committed to the process as your friend is, and always, always lift her up and empower her as a woman, and let her
absolutely
know, and let her know that she is, there's more to her being a woman than her breast. So good luck. Good luck with that. God bless you. Judy, do you want to say something else?
Yes, yes. You know, and reach out to us, you know, whether it's via Instagram message or Facebook message. And, you know, we'd love to reach out to her with just some words of encouragement. So, yeah, do that. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. God bless. And, folks, that will be it for today's Chrisley Confessions.
That is it. And I'm going to leave you with one quote, because I do feel like the overall common thread from this week's episode has been betrayal. So just remember, when somebody betrays you, it's a reflection of their character, not yours.
Amen. So until next time, folks, God bless, speed forward, and know that the Chrisleys are behind you in all things good, and with God, everything is possible. Thank you.